Story is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be a part of the show, call 334-321-1390 or text in at 334-784-1685. The boys are bringing you all the action on the Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. When it comes to the Tigers, the SEC, and the hottest topics in sports, this is where you want to be.
Got to give credit where credit is due. The Big Ten takes precedent yet again over the SEC. It's Thursday, and you're on the line.
Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, straight from the ESPN 106.7 studio, here's Christian Griffin and Tripp Upton.
Welcome in, welcome in. It is the Thursday edition of On the Line. Here on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and that Radio Alabama app. I'm Christian Griffin here with you in the studio. My goodness, it says only 89 on my unnamed weather app. It feels gross outside here this afternoon. Very, very happy to be inside here for a little bit, and excited to bring you what is going to be a jam-packed show here this afternoon. You know what Thursdays mean. At 2:30 and at 3:30, our wonderful guest Brad Law of the Auburn Sports Network. In the first hour, Chris Gordy, host of the Locked On SEC podcast, joining us in hour number two. He is Tripp Upton across from me, my man. I don't know about you, but first off,
I bet I'm feeling happy. 22.
Gross. Happy.
What?
Are you a Swiftie?
I wouldn't say that I'm like a diehard. I liked some of her songs. I like some of the Taylor Swift songs, but I'm not one of those people that looks at like the album covers and tries to uncode everything, like the mass psychosis that the Taylor Swift fans have.
I don't know. Are you like, do you draft Travis Kelce in just from the standpoint of
no.
Taylor?
No. Why on earth would I do that? No. I am not. I respect Taylor Swift music. I liked a lot of her stuff, but I'm not a Swiftie where like I'm sitting outside the concert venue and if she plays my surprise song or whatever, I'm gonna be bursting out crying. Like I don't care. Like, cool.
I don't know. That was weirdly specific.
I've seen a TikTok. I've seen a TikTok.
Yeah,
I'll have to show it to you after
the
break.
I've seen that video as well.
No, you haven't. You're making me sound crazy.
Well. Happy Thursday
yes.
to you, sir. I wasn't planning on getting fired up today.
Really?
I really wasn't, because it's a very good Thursday. I've gotten a lot done today. I had two of the unnamed chicken and waffle sandwiches that are an absolute problem. Chicken and waffles are my favorite food in the entire world. So as soon as this company brought them into everyday life, it's been a bad problem to have. But it's been a great day.
It's been a good day.
And then we started figuring out what we wanted to talk about.
Correct.
Here today, and it was right at the end of the show yesterday when we got the news about the Big Ten. And so I figured that would just be the perfect place to start here this afternoon. But before I give a lot of credit to the Big Ten and I lose credit for the Southeastern Conference, do want to give you some updates in terms of the phone lines and the text box. The phone lines are open for the first 30 minutes of today's program if you would like to be a part of it at 334-321-1390. The Send Medicine text box always open as well at 334-784-1685. The text box brought to you by Send Medicine, because at Send Medicine, you get VIP medical care with direct access to your personal physician. With 20-plus years of emergency room experience, Dr. Eric Sen is bringing personalized, access-driven health care right here to the Plains. You can find out more. You can become a member today by visiting SenMedicine.com. That's SENNMedicine.com. Appreciate all that he does for our high school coverage, which we got to talk a lot about yesterday with both of the respective head coaches of Lee Scott Academy and Auburn High School, but as well for everything he does right here on ESPN 106.7. Happy Thursday.
Happy Thursday.
He's Trip Upton. I'm Christian Griffin.
That's true. That is all of that is true.
That is factual. What is also factual is that the Big Ten,
indisputable even,
has that is indisputable, and we didn't even have to go to video audio review for that. But here we are at the end of yesterday's show. Was during the last commercial break, I believe, is when you got the ESPN notification saying that the Big Ten is going to replay review audio, meaning theirs is going to be exactly synced up like the ACC's is, where, okay, this play is under further review. White hat goes to the monitor, goes and looks into the screen or whatever the case may be. But look, when you watch an ACC game, there's also a camera in the ACC replay booth, in the official replay booth. And oh, what is that? Huh. The play-by-play and the color commentator actually turn their mics off, and you hear the conversation that goes on between the white hat who's on the field and the studio and the guys that are looking at every single replay angle to make sure that they got the call right or if it needs to be overturned. Let's take you back to Saturday night, shall we? Let's revisit Western Michigan and Michigan.
In Ann Arbor.
Ann Arbor, the maze out, for whatever reason they decided to make that the all maze out.
Maze.
The game was fantastic.
Amazing.
It was amazing.
We get on grown-ups every single time we talk about the word maze, like for Michigan.
I will never complain.
I'll never
complain about grown-ups references. Okay, but even before the final drive, the field goal that Western Michigan kicked, when it was 9-7, they go up 12-7. Weirdly enough, that 30-whatever-yard field goal only took 3 seconds off the clock. And it's like, okay, well, that's interesting. And every home stadium has their little bit of, you know what, especially at the high school level, right? You let the clock run for a second or two longer have the lead, or you stop it until they take that first dribble if you need, you know, if you're late in the fourth quarter and your team is trailing. I know that you said you used to do some clock operating stuff.
Yeah, so what I've – this is alleged. This is all alleged.
This is not fact.
This is not factual.
This is all hearsay.
This is all hearsay. But from allegedly that the coach for the my high school, he would give the clock operator a look in close games. And the clock operator would know, because he would always be in home games, where if the other team is inbounding the ball late and my school was up, allegedly he would start the clock the second the ball left his hands.
The inbounder's hands.
The inbounder's hands, correct. If the roles were reversed and my high school maybe needed to get a shot off and needed some time, the clock allegedly might not start until the player catches the ball and has possession.
That button may have just been stiff for a second. You had to press it two or three times to actually get it to start rolling down. And again, you see that in the high school level. You see that in the college levels for smaller games or whatever the case may be. But where it can't happen is in games like this, where, again, Western Michigan kicked a field goal with 30-something seconds to play, go up 12-7, and everybody's seen it by now. Michigan completes a pass. They get to midfield. Spike it, 8 seconds left. Hail Mary out of the back of the end zone. No time left. Ball game. Western Michigan wins it 12-7. They then go back and they look at the replay, and every single replay that the non-attendees got to see was, those are three donuts. That is no time. That is triple zeros on the clock. Yet somehow the white hat is able to make his way back onto the field and make the call that there is 1 second that is put back on the clock. And this is despite multiple cameras looking at the head coaches, where it's believed that Kyle Whittingham, the head coach of Michigan, says, yeah, there wasn't time left or whatever the case may be. I'm not a professional lip reader, but on social media, they say they are, so it's accurate. But they put a second back, and again, we watched this game in Midtown, and I remember vividly saying this feels too much like college football for something non-college football to happen. Hail Mary is completed. Michigan wins it 13-12. We talked all about how Western Michigan, their AD, as well as the MAC or the head coach, the athletic director, as well as the MAC, took this really respectfully, and you almost tipped your cap to, man, they just kind of allowed this to end. It was kind of just, okay, did they slide you an extra $1 million or whatever to keep your mouth shut just so that way Michigan could be declared the winner? Then we talked about it yesterday that the MAC conference came out and the head commissioner said, you know what, based off of everything that the Big Ten has said, we see that things weren't ruled the way that they should have. And now it's almost re-amped this conversation because the MAC almost sat back in their chair and let the Big Ten almost, it's like when you know you're guilty and you try and over-explain and you try and almost do too much to prove your innocence. And everybody knows that it was that way of like, why are you guys talking about all of these camera angles? Why are you going back and doing all of this, all of this, all of this, going back into the rule book? It's like, if you're doing that much to prove your innocence, there's something fishy there. The MAC came back yesterday and said, you know what, based off of all this, we deem that it was ruled and judged incorrectly. Because of that, we would like to be declared the winner. We would like it to be a 12-7 Western Michigan win over Michigan. And whether that will publicly happen or not, the public has seen that as a Michigan loss, and I think that that will hurt them in the long run based off of what their college football playoff hopes may or may not look like. But we now turn to yesterday, and we now turn our show to today, because do I agree with the Big Ten's call to uphold the game? Do I agree with the way that the Big Ten has handled all of this? No, because I think I speak for both of us and say that we feel rather confidently that the Broncos of Western Michigan should be declared the victors of that game.
I would, if the rules allowed it to be such, yes. I don't know if the rules allow it to be as such.
Sure.
In a perfect world, there should not have been a Hail Mary attempt.
The second one, at least.
Yes, the second one.
Do I agree with that? No. But do I now give credit, at least a little bit, and as bad as it makes me feel to have to sit there and mark up another tally into the Big Ten, because again, they were the first to say, you know what, the SEC said you're not going to, we don't approve pro players, but we're going to make it to where you can't have them. The Big Ten gets another notch in the belt because, other than the ACC, they are the first to have a legitimate, true national controversy. And I know I can't say it truly like that because there's obviously calls in every single big game in the Big Ten where people can look at it and go, man, that was the wrong call. That was the wrong call, whatever the case may be. But the Big Ten just got basically embarrassed on national TV based off of the rulings that they are deciding to go with. And so because of that, the Big Ten says, fine, you know what? Let's join the ACC. We're going to make it to where there are cameras in the replay booth. There is audio that is between the white hat and the main people that are looking at these calls. So that way, there is no gray area in terms of the calls. And I have to give a lot of credit to that. And at first, yesterday, I sat there and said, man, that's really good. I'm so glad. And we made the comments of, man, I can't believe that this is not mandatory throughout all of college football. And then we were planning our show today, and I apologize for my rant and that I'm talking too long, and I haven't even really gotten to the rant quite yet. But writing what we were thinking about talking about to start the show today, man, it really lit a fire under me to shame the SEC for not taking this route, for not making it to where you have full audio. There is no gray area that the SEC just chooses to live in when it comes to officiating, when it comes to these calls that nobody really knows the answer on why it was ruled this, but it is. Whether that's the, and again, this is not the emotional ties to last year in terms of me still being strung out on the calls that went against Auburn, but when you're looking at the money that was trying to get Hugh Freeze back out of the SEC, when you're looking at so many different things that happened to where the announcers and even Steve Austin or whoever they, Matt what? Austin, not Steve Austin.
What?
Matt Austin, yeah. is that Stone Cold right there? No.
What?
But like Matt Austin, one of the rules analysts being brought in and them all three of them going, yep, I agree. I think this should be the call. Oh, wait. How did Jackson Arnold not cross the goal line? Or whatever the case may be, the idea that we still let the SEC live in this gray area is absolutely sickening to me. To do whatever they can to protect their babies that are planning on making the college football playoff and screwing over all of the other teams is absolutely ridiculous. And the idea that now the Big Ten has taken those steps to eliminate that, I would stand up and applaud you, because what happens with the SEC game in and game out? You think about the Florida-Georgia play, the deep throw from Lagway to the Florida receiver that was underthrown but was ruled a catch on the field. That would have most likely won the game for Florida on third and whatever it was, but would have gotten Florida into field goal range. Instead, after a review, they somehow found a way to make it an incomplete pass, even though it was ruled a catch on the field and there was no way in hell that it was indisputable evidence. Nobody has to answer that. Nobody has to answer any questions. Nobody has to sit there and go, you know, maybe we should try and find a reason of why this was ruled the way that it was. The SEC just hopes that you blow it under the rug and you don't bring it back up, because it's okay, we have football again next Saturday, and so it's going to be just fine. I think it's absolutely ridiculous that we allow this to go on, where we allow a gray area for an entire conference to live in. And I think that the Big Ten needs to be applauded for, again, not for the decision that they made during that, but to essentially say, you know what, from here on out, to eliminate anything like that, we need to make it to where there is clear and concise communication, so nobody watching the game, nobody in the national media has to wonder why we made a ruling. Your thoughts?
Take a deep breath.
Yeah.
It's okay. It's okay.
I have more, but...
Oh, I know. Well, you know, my point in all this is that I also applaud the Big Ten, because you look at some of the discrepancies of the second being left on the clock, or the field goal where I was doing some quick math, Clay, where a ball that travels 65 miles an hour off a kicker's foot, that goes 95 feet per second. Looking at that in yards, that's 31 yards per second. The field goal was a hair over that at about, let's say, 33 yards. So that's about it. That's about 1 second alone on the kick. Plus, according to the unnamed artificial intelligence, a snap, hold, and kick takes about 1.2 to 1.4. So at minimum, from snap to the time it crosses the uprights, that's over 3 seconds.
Yeah, it's about 3.5, maybe 4. Yeah, plus, yeah, when it hits the back of the net, when the clock is
which is another second. The game clock time, the maximum of 5 seconds could run off the game clock during a successful field goal. All that to say, again, that's another discrepancy that's in that game. And I do give the credit to the Big Ten for knowing that, because they know that what conversation for example, what Big Noon Kickoff is going to be in Ann Arbor next week.
Yeah.
The entire conversation is going to be about that second. And that's what's going to have to follow the conference. Instead, it is, okay, this happened. This is frustrating for our partnership with the MAC, where we bring in a lot of MAC teams for Big Ten teams to play, because it helps the regionality, because teams in the MAC are not scared of scheduling in-state opponents, Alabama. And so they are able to rectify this by saying, you know what, let's put it in video. And my question to you, Christian, and to you, the listener, and to the SEC, to Greg Sankey, what is the downside for not having this? What is the negative for not having this? What is the reason where you are so confident in keeping this standard of not having the transparency? What's the downside of having that kind of transparency, Christian?
The downside is because when you live in secrecy, you get away with things that you shouldn't. And that is what the SEC continues to do, because, again, they need to make sure that their teams get into the playoffs. And again, this is not just a argument directed at, oh, the SEC is screwing over Auburn again. Like, that's not what this is about. See, it's just the idea that the SEC has to protect its face and its babies when it comes to the teams that make the college football playoff. And I think that secretly there are a lot of decisions that go on, maybe not necessarily directly leading to wins, but anything that could go in favor of the team that's supposed to advance and supposed to be good enough to represent the SEC in a postseason, you cannot tell me that there's not some sort of benefit under that.
I don't know. I can't fully agree with that, because while I understand what you're saying, and I understand, like, the you know, because I ask you, when's the last time the favorite team was screwed over on one of these calls? Like, I will concede you that, but it just doesn't make sense to me that there's this grand conspiracy to defraud that certain schools and the benefit of others. And if there was, why hasn't this been exposed yet publicly? Maybe it's because it's that gentleman's agreement across the Southeastern Conference that, you know, we're not going to go after you cheating if you don't go after us cheating. That's fine. But at the same time, I look at all those games, and I'm just not someone that's going to say, like, dim refs cost us the ball game.
No, again, I don't mean – and that's why I'm saying I'm not directly leading to wins.
Right, because you look at what, you know, the Oklahoma game. After that missed flag, it's like Auburn still had a chance with the lead to hold it and get the ball back.
Right.
Auburn was leading if they didn't score that touchdown. And even if they gave Georgia the touchdown on the run back, Auburn still would be leading.
Yeah.
Those are true. I just don't understand the lack of transparency when it would only benefit you. It humanizes. I'd love to know what Jeff at Enterprise has to say about this, because as someone that isn't official, by the way, buddy, if you're reffing the game on tomorrow night, maybe we make some of these great calls go towards the Auburn Tigers.
He says, you know what? That's a great idea.
But, you know, it would allow for the scrutiny instead of having, oh, we got to get this guy. It's, okay, let's listen to what they're saying. What are they looking at? What's the exact ruling? Because what happens in the stadium is you look at the ruling and you're going to kind of assume it's going to go your team's favor, unless you're an Auburn fan. You kind of just assume it's not. And you look at the video board and you're looking at one thing, but they might be looking at something else. Like, there, how many times it's like, oh, we're looking to see if he fumbled the ball or not. And then they come back and goes, actually, it's targeting.
Yeah. And it's like, oh, well, yeah, when did that work its way into K? Or it's how many times do you hear the, man, they must have had a camera angle that we didn't have.
It helps referees. It helps the transparency of the conference. And if anything, it makes you look more professional
that's a fantastic word. Yes, it makes it look more professional. And sorry to cut you off.
No, but you're fine.
It gets to the point of, if there was, and going forward now in the Big Ten, again, all of this resulting around the fact that the Big Ten is now going to replay review audio to where the White Hat is able to talk to the control room and those that are making the decisions, much like the ACC is. And you hear how refreshing and professional that sounds, because the play-by-play announcer, the color commentator, everybody on the field, everybody watching, everybody listening goes, okay, even if it's not the right call, you at least go, okay, I see what the process was. I see what
it allows for empathy, yes, where you're able to put yourself in the referee's shoes and the official's shoes, and they go, while I don't agree with the call, that is the rule.
I see what
it doesn't need to be those certain people in the stadium where I'm having to explain to people, like if I'm watching the game with my friends like I would in college, and be like, technically they are right, this is the process, not just because it doesn't go in our favor. Like, this is what they're looking at. Technically it doesn't. I understand the call. And 80% of the time, for most games, I do understand it, but it is that 20% of times that I don't that we need it for.
That's the essential of asking referees to be interviewed after the game, because we don't hear anything that they talk about.
They put out a statement 2 days after the fact and saying, yeah, we messed up.
Yes, rather than just the idea of, man, even if it was wrong, this is at least what we heard. And this is the way that we need to approach going about it. I know that it wasn't there last Saturday for Western Michigan and Michigan, which is obviously the game that has changed all of this. But think about if there was the professionalism of, okay, you at least hear the referees talking about the ghost camera or the ghost clock that was somehow on the field, and that's supposed to be the one that's you go off of, because the actual clock and the clock you see on TV is not synced and not accurate. That shouldn't be an excuse. We live in 2026 where we can see, okay, you know what? They got the football, or they got the first down past the marker by whatever the case may be in the NFL. In college, we still have to walk old men out with chains and measure it out to make sure that the amount of chain links are able to get the first down. But the professionalism would clear up so much of whatever the gray area that college football holds. And I think that is a fear of the SEC, because it puts them less in charge of the actual decisions that happen on the field.
I mean, I think that's fair. At the end of the day, that it should be the players and the coaches to decide what the outcome of a game and their decisions, not the decisions of an anonymous control room.
A control room that doesn't have any sort of response, that's able to wipe their hands clear, shake their hands, go and collect their check, and return on with their life when everybody else is having to live with the consequences that happened on the field, whether it be good or whether it be bad. We've blown way past our break. I apologize, but that was how I felt on this Thursday afternoon.
It's okay. Get it all out.
We will stick with the SEC, but instead some jokes that were made by Mike Elko, the head coach of the Texas A&M Aggies, in reference to the LSU Tigers and how it feels like the SEC is just babysitting, and they're talking about a dad and a son when it comes to the Southeastern Conference. We're just underway here on the Thursday edition of On the Line. We're back right after this.
You're on the line with Christian Griffin and Trip Upton. Be a part of the show by calling 334-321-1390 or text us at 334-784-1685.
All right, we're back here on the Thursday edition of On the Line. A very quick segment before we get Brad Law of the Auburn Sports Network on the phone lines to join us here and to talk all things Auburn and Baylor, as well as some of the really cool things you're going to see as you make your way to kick off on the plains here with Auburn and Southern Miss inside Jordan-Hare Stadium. But just for a quick minute or two, do want to dive into just the quotes that Mike Elko made towards the LSU Tigers over this entire SEC controversy, where essentially the LSU Tigers came out yesterday and was like, LSU, we were just kidding. We were never going to play pro players.
Yeah, SEC.
Why would you ever? Why would you ever think that we would?
Issue's moot, Christian. Christian, it's moot.
It's moot.
It's moot. M-O-O-T.
It's like a player asking for, I'm going to enter the transfer portal. You give me more money. Okay, coach. Yeah, roll time. I never wanted to leave. What do you mean? Hook 'em horn. Coach, come on.
Loyalty.
You know I didn't want to leave.
Remember, Christian, every player that stays at your school is loyal and they love the brand and that they love being the opportunity to be a part of your favorite team. And if they leave, they're only in it for the money. They're only in it for the glory. They're never going to be anything because they never wanted to be there anyway. Always remember that.
Oh, you have to. Mike Elko took a very, very funny dig at LSU earlier this week on the Aggie Football Hour podcast. Says, quote, "This is a little bit like the son figuring out where his limits are until dad comes home and raises his voice and then goes, 'Son, I was just kidding. I didn't mean any of that.' I think that's what you're seeing. LSU will be in the SEC. LSU will be fired up when we go to Baton Rouge here in a couple of weeks. All of those things are going to happen. This is a little bit like parenting going on right now." So basically calling out the SECA and also LSU, basically calling out both of their bluffs, going, yeah, they were basically just seeing how far they could get with one another until action had to be taken. And they both sat there and said, "We're just kidding. LSU, we weren't going to play pro players. And the SEC, we weren't really going to kick you out." That's funny you think that. Okay.
Yeah,
it's mute. We can move on and we can hold hands and sing kumbaya.
It's just another example. You know, it's good for the conference to flex its muscle, but it's times like these makes you remember the muscle ain't really that big.
Boom.
Boom.
We will take a break. We'll come back. I do want to let you know that I have now received multiple texts in the Send Medicine text box referring to me to please take the man card for your Taylor Swift. So
I didn't.
We got to take a break. Brad Law of the Auburn Sports Network joins us next.
You're on the line, and we're just 30 minutes in. Now back to the studio with Christian Griffin and Trip Upton on ESPN 106.7.
Minutes into the Thursday edition of On the Line here on ESPN 106.7. He is Trip Upton. I'm Christian Griffin. Appreciate everybody for being here with us on the Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. And we bring in a man who is a big part of everything that goes on Saturday afternoons and Saturday evenings coming up this week. But a man to recap everything that happened in Atlanta, Brad Law of the Auburn Sports Network here with us. And Brad, after being 1-12 in their last one score games, Gulch Golish starts off his era with a one-score win, a one-point win, the first since the Cam back in 2010. How's it feel being 1-0?
Well, it was good. There was a lot of things to like. I thought the tackles played well. I thought the corners played well. Linebackers played exceptionally well. I thought that the the offensive tackles. I thought the wide receivers played well. Certainly the running backs and Jeremiah Cobb in particular had awesome games. Bryce Kane, a big special teams tackle, and the reverse.
Yeah.
Byron Brown completed nearly 75% of his passes. I thought for a game one, when you understand that game one isn't going to be clean, it's not going to be crystal, you know, just perfectly clean. I thought it was outstanding. It's a much improved Baylor team. You find a way to win. You get big plays, identity-building plays from your offense and your defense in the fourth quarter in order to win a one-score game. And you get really clear pictures on what you have to improve for week two and beyond. So a whole lot of good out of game one, for sure.
I'm glad you brought up that last point, because that's something we've talked a lot about of doesn't it bring so much more confidence, not only for the players, but for the coaches, to be able to look at film against a very, very high quality opponent and sit there and go, these are the things we did well versus these are the things that we didn't do so well, rather than one of those 840-3 type of football games that you play in your home stadium where it just feels like everything worked and you get a little bit of that complacency syndrome.
Yeah, I mean, and two, it's just kind of the realistic way that football works. When you play a quality opponent, and Auburn was one of only three SEC teams that played another P4 opponent in week one of the season. So when you play a Power 4 opponent, you're not going to be perfect. Like, I think about my son playing PlayStation when he gets on Dynasty mode. And
when he plays you, right?
He rolls right into year two, year three, year four. Even though his roster's new because of the portal, he's still the player in the game, and so it's still smooth. In fact, he's probably naturally better than he was the last game because every game builds experience and so on and so forth. That's not how real football works. That's not how a real season works. And so, yeah, to win the game, and also be able to see, yeah, these are the real areas where you got to identify if you want to be the best that you can be. And I think, Christian, that's the attitude that the coaches are taking. It's not, well, if you want to beat Florida, or if you want to beat Georgia, or if you want to beat fill-in-the-blank team. It's how does this team maximize what it can do? How can it be at its best? And then the results will take care of themselves. The results will be what they'll be if they get their processes right. And that's really beneficial coming off of a win to be able to do that.
You know, Brad, I think that's a great point, talking about the process of it, because you're looking at, you know, we've heard all the beginning of this week, worries about the offense, that it didn't look great, while other teams that may have played lesser competitions like Tennessee or Alabama or Georgia were firing on all cylinders. What did you see from Saturday on the offensive side of the ball that gives you some optimism that they can build back better against Southern Miss in Jordan-Hare Stadium on Saturday night?
Yeah, those guys at the guard spot struggled a bit with Baylor's twisting and stunning. And I don't know that people understand really everything that Baylor put into their defensive line in the offseason. Baylor had a complete shift in their attitude toward NIL after last year in the offseason. The money at Baylor said, no, we got to get serious about this. And Dave Aranda said, well, if we're going to do it, and he knows a thing or two about championship defenses, he says, we've got to have depth and experience and talent all across the defensive front. And so they spent money, and they brought in like 8 or 9 guys on the defensive line, including a grad transfer who played a major role for Indiana. Like, not a role player who happened to get a ring and he only played in blowout games, but an actual, like, regular on their defensive line. And they got a former conference defensive player of the year from a smaller division, and they got just a bunch of other guys that had experience and a lot of it at a lot of places. That's a really underrated defensive line that Auburn played last week, and with the twists and the stunts and all that from the interior guys, that caused a lot of trouble for the center and the two guards. Well, now they know that, and other teams are going to try to copycat that, which means the work that Auburn has put in against that, it's going to have an opportunity to pay off. So that's the interior. And I thought the tackles played well. I thought Joseph Simmons, Stanton Ramil, they held up time after time against that new-look Baylor D-line, those edge guys, outside linebackers when they went to 3-4. I thought they were great. In fact, the right side of the line got a pretty good push. Like, a lot of Auburn's big runs came off the right side of the line. So I thought the tackles played really well.
Brad Law of the Auburn Sports Network here with us on the phone lines on the Thursday edition of On the Line. And last week when we were able to talk with you, we kind of gave a couple of caveats of if Auburn wins this game, but it's not necessarily pretty, what do you want to see? And I think kind of the common response was you want to see them handle the adversity. You want to see them get punched in the mouth. And after that third interception from Byron Brown, walked right over to Coach Goller, said, defense is going to get a stop. We're going to go march down the field. We're going to score. That's exactly what they did. Your thoughts from that drive alone, and then have to ask about the Eric Winters tackle as well to ultimately seal the deal, your view from that standpoint?
Yeah, identity defining plays potentially. I mean, Auburn's 0-6 in one score games last year, and I think a lot of fans probably watched the fourth quarter last week going, I've seen this movie before,
yeah,
and I know how it ends. And then this team went in and re-edited it, though, and put it back on the screen so it had an alternate ending. Because you saw the offense just bear down. Byram said, you're not stopping me. I'm getting in the end zone. And Jeremiah Cobb with the great seal block, Simmons with an outstanding block. Guys just did what it took to make a play. And that's, you know, we talk sometimes so general about football. We go, well, I don't care what happens. Somebody just got to make a play. And that's what happened on offense last week. And then Baylor comes down, and you know what? They made some plays. They made some sensational fourth down plays.
Yeah,
they're not, you know, shadow figures without ability. They made plays. And then it gets down to the end, and they try to run a similar version of the play that they got the touchdown on, and Eric Winters made the play. He was able to flush what happened right before that when Baylor scored, and he made a textbook tackle of a bigger guy short of the end zone. Again, just make a play. Well, they did it. They rewrote the ending of the movie. And so I think stuff like that has the potential, if you're, like the coaches say, humble enough to take the coaching and build on it. That's got the potential to be something you look back on at the end of the year and go, well, that defined the season in game number one.
Yeah, we've talked a lot about that just from the standpoint of getting guys to have that understanding of what it's like to win, especially in that fourth quarter. You can't tell me that this coaching staff and these players are not going to be able to dig back into that game in Atlanta and use that later on throughout SEC play. But before SEC play gets started, we get to make our way back inside Jordan-Hare Stadium for kickoff on the plane. What is your thoughts on just the overall excitement being able to see a packed out Jordan-Hare Stadium yet again under the lights, and maybe some of the cool changes that Auburn fans are expecting of seeing, including an earlier Tiger walk that fans need to know?
Yeah, definitely for Tiger walk, for the people that want to get there for Tiger walk, you got to understand with some of the gate closures and construction and changes, and they've had to change where the visiting team goes into the stadium, and that's taken away some stuff for fans. So kind of give yourself an extra 30 minutes or so for everything that you normally do on a game day, and that includes the literal time of Tiger walk moving up by 30 minutes. So I think Saturday it's kickoff is 6:55, so 4:25 is Tiger walk. It's exactly 2.5 hours before the actual kickoff time. So 4:25, and our Tiger tailgate show is going to happen right outside right there at Tiger walk plaza under the big tree where Tiger walk comes to a close. So those are some of the things we're excited to see. And then just look, we get six of them this year. Unless you make a playoff run and you host a playoff game. But you get six regular season games, so you don't take any of them for granted. From sun up to sun down, you're enjoying the city, you're enjoying downtown, you're enjoying campus, stadium, and everything that surrounds a home game. There's just there aren't many better days than a home game day on the plane.
Brad Law of the Auburn Sports Network. And Brad, I was able to catch a little bit of Tiger talk last night, which you can catch on Wings 94.3 here in Auburn. And Coach Golish talked a lot about Coach Blake Anderson and these Southern Miss Golden Eagles being kind of a similar kind of mindset to what they're trying to do here at Auburn. Talk to me a little bit and talk to our listeners about what Southern Miss brings to the table and what to expect from a team coming out of the Sun Belt Conference into a game in Jordan-Hare Stadium.
Well, a lot of this is unknown because last week they played Alcorn State. They won the game 49-3. it wasn't really ever that competitive. So you don't know what they showed and what they didn't show. You have basically a half on offense and defense where you feel fairly confident that they did what they're going to try to do. They're going to try to go fast. They're going to try to run the ball effectively. They had two running backs combined for about 210 yards. The lead running back, Steven Johnson's a JUCO transfer, 5'9", 209 pounds. So a lot of power in a small package, or in a low center of gravity type of build. So powerful runner, quick steps with a lot of power generated. And again, they had one receiver who had more than three catches. A Minnesota or an Illinois transfer originally from Birmingham, six catches, 94 yards, one touchdown. Just didn't have to do a ton. There are some coaches on this staff that coached with Blake Anderson in his time at Utah State from 21 to 23. There's some crossover there. Blake Anderson has been at Southern Miss before as the offensive coordinator in the late 2000s and early 2010s. And a guy who was the offensive coordinator at North Carolina for a couple of years over a decade ago. So he's been around. They're going to be, you know, Auburn's going to have more talent on the field. Southern Miss is going to bring a lot of confidence, though. They put up over 500 yards of offense last week against Alcorn State. So it'll be up to Auburn to try to stop the run and make them utilize the passing game that they just didn't have to use last week very much.
And on the other side for the Auburn Tigers, regardless of looking up at the scoreboard after the final horn goes off, what does a successful week two look like in terms of Auburn football?
Win the game. You pay Alex Golish to win games, and so win the game. I think if you learn anything in the win, that's a cherry on top, but win the game. I love that he was asked about winning big last night on Tiger Talk. And he said, I promise you, we don't entertain that because you respect every opponent, and winning games in college football is hard to do. And you respect every opportunity to do that. And anytime you take your mind away from that mindset and that process, it usually doesn't work out very well. I mean, sure. We have examples the last few years of games that the staff didn't have anything to do with them, but fans have seen weeks where it didn't look like the opponent got the full respect of the staff or the team, and it didn't go well. This game, they're just going to try to win the ball game, and that's really all they need to do because they're not playing 11 games in one day. They're playing one game Saturday, win that one game, and go from there.
Easy enough. Mm-hmm. Very nicely said. Brad Law of the Auburn Sports Network here with us on the phone lines. And my friend, tell everybody what they need to keep up with throughout the week before we get going with the Tiger Tailgate Show and anything else they're going to see over on the Auburn Sports Network before kickoff.
Yeah, no, that's it. Next up is the Tiger Tailgate Show, 3:45 Saturday afternoon. We've got a great guest list, too. Derek Hall, who's one of two Auburn players on the Seahawks, who won their opener last night.
Yeah.
Derek is going to be on the show Saturday. We've got Taylor Davis from the SEC Network. He's going to be on the show. We also have Cedric McIntyre, Dontarius Thomas, Benji Rowland, latest SEC legend from Auburn. I mean, it is a loaded Tiger Tailgate Show to help us get ready for kickoff on the Plains, starting at 3:45 at our new location at Tiger Walk Plaza. Hope everybody will join us in person or over on Wings 94.3.
Yeah, how awesome was that? You saw the video of the Auburn Tigers predicting the Patriots or the Seahawks, and a couple people called for the Derek Hall sack. More of them called for the Nehemiah Pritchett interception, and both of them came true. So pretty cool to see Auburn in the pros. Awesome you're going to be able to talk with Derek. And a lot of the guys I've seen on social media planning on making their way back to the Plains for Auburn and Southern Miss. Brad, we greatly appreciate your time. Looking forward to a fantastic weekend and a good recap that we'll be able to discuss with you next Thursday.
You got it, guys. Always a pleasure. War Eagle.
War Eagle. Brad Law of the Auburn Sports Network. Again, appreciate him for taking some time to join us here on this Thursday afternoon. We will take a break. We'll come back and wrap up hour number one right after this.
You are on the line with Christian Griffin and Trip Upton on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and on the Radio Alabama app.
Wrapping up hour number one here on the Thursday edition of On the Line. Appreciate everybody for being here with us. Appreciate Brad Law of the Auburn Sports Network for taking some time to be here with us, as he is every single Thursday at 2:30, to give us his insight, his knowledge on everything, recapping and previewing everything for the Auburn Tigers. And man, it's interviews and conversations like that. I don't even want to say that it feels like an interview. I guess maybe it still is, but it feels much more conversational, and I think that's the way that it should be. But
yeah,
the idea that we were able to sit there and say, okay, Brad, what did you think about this play that happened on the field? Like,
and not what about this court case? What are your reaction to this seating? What is your reaction to this?
We got this one clip from practice and everybody's freaking out about it. And so,
yeah, instead it's, hey, what happened in the ball game, Brad? I love it.
Football, Brad. Well, we have just a minute or two before speaking the music football kicks us out of here. Yeah, the Super Bowl rematch. There we go.
There you go.
So it was, in fact, the rematch of the big game. The good Patriots job. And the Seahawks, and
it was one of the it stunk. Let's call it what it is.
It was one of the football games of all time.
Yeah, Sam Darnold gets hurt on the first drive. Drake May with a ham's turkey and salami meatball subs thrown up in the air and for interceptions. He looked horrid. Neither team's running game could really get going. And it just was defensively, like, if you're an Auburn fan, Nehemiah Pritchett played well. Derek Hall played well for the Seahawks. Carlton Davis on the Patriots. So a lot of former Tigers kicking off the season. And now it's time for, and it's, you know what? It's fine. Hopefully tonight's game, the Rams and the 49ers in Melbourne, Australia.
Yeah, the land down under game.
I still,
for those that haven't heard the live events minute, can you look in our log? Do we have that playing anytime soon?
I can look. Hold on.
Because it's so dumb, but it's so good.
Yep.
For those that don't know, the 49ers and the Rams play in Australia tonight. And our ESPN live
event. Tune in for during Chris Gordy's segment.
Right before Chris Gordy's segment?
No, right after.
Okay, so the final segments, the final commercial break, that is where our live events minute will play, and you will hear Tripp's Australian accent talking about the game this evening, which I think a lot of people are expecting to be a little bit better. That being said, I can't complain because I had the Seahawks defense in fantasy. And
same, I did too, 14 points.
Got me 14 points.
Boom.
I also had Ramondre Stevenson, who couldn't run the ball but caught 5 passes, so ended up getting like 14 and a half fantasy score, so our fantasy points. So we'll take that with what we can get. Hour number one in the books. What are we talking about to start hour number two?
Southern Miss.
A Southern Miss preview to start hour number two.
The following is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be a part of the show, call 334-321-1390 or text in at 334-784-1685. The boys are bringing you all the action on the Auburn Opelika sports leader. When it comes to the Tigers, the SEC, and the hottest topics in sports, this is where you want to be.
Chris Gordy of the Locked On SEC podcast, the win projector for the Auburn Tigers, and a deep dive into Southern Miss, all here in hour number two.
Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, straight from the ESPN 106.7 studio, here's Christian Griffin and Tripp Upton.
Hour number one in the books. We welcome you into hour number two here on the Thursday edition of On the Line. He is Tripp Upton. I'm Christian Griffin. Appreciate everybody for being here with us and spending a little bit of time here on this blistering hot day in Auburn, Alabama. I say that, and again, it's only 89, but doesn't really feel like it outside. So If it wants to be overcast or it wants to be a little bit windy on Saturday afternoon while everybody begins tailgating around Jordan-Hare Stadium and for kickoff, which I know we talked a little bit about yesterday about how you're finally starting to see the sun set earlier. And so it's like 7 o'clock high school kickoffs actually mean kicking off with the sunset. And so
instead of sitting in the baking press box.
Yes. And so for Auburn,
sitting on top of the press box for you guys.
Yes. It's been recently. Very much. Yes, it has. Very happy to be back inside and back at Judd Scott Field. But yeah, Brad said that the kickoff set for around 6:55, and so should be right at sunset, which is very, very nice to hear just for those inside of Jordan-Hare Stadium. But Brad did join us in hour number one, got to talk all things Auburn and Baylor, a little bit of recap, a little bit of preview for Southern Miss, and then just some notes that Auburn fans need to be aware about in terms of just some of the changes for Tiger Walk. And I know that there's a lot in terms of like the concessions and places you can go versus places that are a little bit, again, challenging with all of the North End Zone project working its way closer and closer to being beautiful, being polished. And so, more importantly, man, just excited to get football back in Jordan-Hare Stadium. Very, very excited for that. But we started hour number one talking about the Big Ten going to replay audio. And so, basically, the white hat who was on the fields will be able to have communication to the control room and to the guys that make the overall decisions, as they always do, but much like the ACC, the announcers will simply turn off their headset, and we, the listeners or the viewers, will be able to listen to that conversation and just the refreshingness or the refreshment that brings to college football, eliminating the gray area. And I had my fun little tangent on how the SEC just continues to live in the gray area when it comes to the officials not having to speak up on any sort of anything, whether that's right or wrong in terms of challenges. And at least personally, I still believe that is in favor of making sure that basically the SEC doesn't cannibalize itself like the SEC West used to, where it was like, holy cow, you could have any of these five teams make a big time run, yet they're all going to go 9-3 because it's just like the triangle or the circle of death.
The SEC East of like Missouri, South Carolina, Florida, or the ACC Coastal.
It's like, okay, it's going to be Georgia, and then whenever Florida happens to be good. But the SEC West, when you were looking at Auburn, Alabama, you were looking at Ole Miss, you were looking at Auburn or LSU and Mississippi State the few years, like it was like, holy cow, it's just the it's that circle of what you were looking at for like the high school sports this season of like, well, this team beat this team, but this team beat this team, this team beat this team, this team beat this team. So by proxy, this team is better than this team, but it's like, holy cow, there's a whole lot of teams in there. So that was basically, that's basically my opinion, is the SEC is trying to prevent that to make sure that their three or four teams can still get into the playoff, and how I think that works its way onto the officiating side of things as well. But all of that was in hour number one. If you missed any of it, you can always go back and check it out over at our podcast center at ESPNAU.com.
In an hour number two, we're going to talk to Chris Gordy, host of the Locked On SEC podcast, who was in Baton Rouge last weekend, and I'm sure there's totally nothing on the mind of the Southeastern Conference's biggest brain in Chris Gordy that he's going to want to share about anything going on right now, because it's a slow news cycle in the SEC off the field, like it always is during the college football season, I'm sure. But he'll talk all about LSU, the games from last week, the games from this week, and give his opinions as only Chris Gordy can do. We're going to look at the ESPN win projector for Auburn and how it changed after the Baylor game, but also take a tiny look at, does week one matter in terms of how good a team can be, where teams that are starting out hot week one have fallen off, or teams that have played bad week one have finished strong throughout the season. We'll also do a look into the Southern Miss Golden Eagles and tell you what you got to know about Auburn's newest opponent coming to Jordan-Hare Stadium. So if you want to be a part of the conversation, phone lines will be open for the first 30 minutes of the hour. Give us a call, 334-321-1390. And, you know, join the conversation, be able to get involved. You can also text into the Send Medicine text box, which is always open at 334-784-1OTL. We've had a ton in action in there today. A lot of good stuff with what we're talking about and a lot of me being made fun of or knowing the lyrics to a song, but that's neither here nor there. I know who you are. That phone number is 334-7841-OTL, and the Send Medicine text box, they're sponsored by Send Medicine. There you'll get VIP medical care with direct access to your personal physician. With over 20 years of emergency room experience, Dr. Eric Sen is bringing personalized, access-driven healthcare to the Plains. Become a member today by visiting SendMedicine.com. That's S-E-N-N medicine.com.
And we start hour number two with a little bit of a deep dive, a little bit of a recap into what we are expecting to see from this Southern Miss team. I'm trying to fill out my weekly Giants. Okay, there we go. Having a lot of trouble doing that. I kept skipping over ones. I'm in a little college football pick'em type deal, kind of like our on the line pick'em.
Yeah.
It's for every single game, every single
That's
week.
Awesome.
And that took all of 20 minutes for me to fill out. So let me see our overall stats before I dive into.
Do you want me to go ahead and start you with our Southern Miss information while you pull that up, or do you want to wait till after you're done?
Let's see how fast I can get it right here. I do have our
All right.
official stats. This is through week one, so week zero and week one. Grand total, Brandon, Mr. Gurgley.
Oh, ours. I thought you meant the other one.
Oh no, just pulling up.
Do we have to put
No, just pulling up. Talking about ours.
Okay.
Brandon sits in first with 51 total points. Again, for those that have missed it, we picked the best games of the week. It'll narrow down to 10, kind of like the traditional pick'em. But we have our overall straight-up head-to-head record, but then we also have a point system to where you get a point for the game. You get a point if you predict the cover right, and then if you get both of those, you get a bonus point. So it's up to 3 points per game. And so far, we've done 23 games. We had 8 in week 0. We did every one of those. We had 15 in week 1. So Brandon sits at 51 points. Jack sits at 49. I sit at 45. And Caleb sits at 39.
Yeah, that's all the points that were given out that week. That's all of them.
Oh, wait, and there's Tripp. You have 34.
I thought I had more than that. Okay, you know
it's okay.
What?
Tortoise in the hair, baby.
Tortoise in the hair. You know, it's not the size of the dog in the fight. It's the size of the fight in the dog, Christian. Another great coach speak. Look, we're, you know.
You start barking at me?
I'm not going to bark at you.
Thank you.
But it's just it's the idea that we're getting. It's week one is unpredictable. We're going to talk about this throughout the show today. And how when we get into conference play, that's when we catch our mojo a little bit, you know. And so we're fine, you know.
You're basically like all of the preseason polls of trying to predict what teams are going to look like, but you don't know yet.
Right, exactly. But you know what's luckily? It's the fact of when we get into the season, you know, we're a dangerous team in our conference where if you come to our home stadium, you're a little nervous. You know, it's not a free win. It's going to be it's one of the most underrated environments in college football.
It's one of those, hey, you don't want to go play Tripp in mid-November.
No, absolutely. With when they got nothing to lose and you got everything that you have everything to gain.
You have nothing to gain. Yes.
Yeah, it is going to be a madhouse. But look, we'll train course, you know, first we got to control what we control. We got to get above Caleb. And once we get above Caleb, then we're going to come for Christian. And once we get above Christian, then Jack's going to get a phone call.
That's when you think that I'm going to stay in third.
And then once we get past Jack, it is a just sprint to the finish with Brandon. And unfortunately, we got a shot. But we got to win game one first.
It's funny because, again, the point system does play a big factor. Because, again, Brandon's leading me and Jack. But Jack has a 21-2 record so far through week 0-1. Brandon and I are both 19-4. Thanks, Hawaii. Twice.
Right. Twice.
Twice.
You burned us twice.
Yeah.
What's the for me and Caleb?
Caleb is 18-5. You are 15-8.
Gosh. Who did I believe in that lost? I'm trying to think. I think I believed in Clemson. And then I think I believed in TCU. And I believed in Hawaii twice.
Let's see. You believed in Cal.
Oof. I did believe in Cal.
You believed in Hawaii. I'm sorry.
Again, it's not Hawaii's fault. It's because I believed in you.
You believed in Tripp. You believed in NC State.
Yeah. I did believe in TCU. I know that.
You believed, yes, in TCU. So it's like, yeah. So
did I pick Oregon State?
You also did pick Oregon State to win, so you got the cover points.
I did get the cover right, because I think I was one of the two people that did that correctly.
But yes, you did not
get...
I'm
going to take him again this week. I'm kidding. But
yeah, so again, that's just our little fun thing. We'll be able to submit those games tonight and be able to talk a little bit about them tomorrow afternoon. Live from Laurel Oaks Veterinary Center.
You will be able to talk about them live from Laurel Oaks Veterinary Center, which you should come out. Ribbon cutting for their new office on 1300 Lee Road 112. Come out, say hello, bring your furry friends if you have them, and come check it out down there on, again, 1300 Lee Road, County Road 112. I will not be there because I will be traveling down to Enterprise, where you'll be able to hear myself and Jack Hutton on Wings 94.3, WingsFM.com, that Radio Alabama app, and AHS Mass Media for video on YouTube. So come check us out there as well afterwards. But Christian will be there. Go say hello to Christian. Me and Jack will both call in, so you'll be able to at least hear our voices. You might not be able to see our faces, which might honestly be better for the people that'll be at the ribbon cutting.
You said it. You said it. I did not. Southern Miss, looking at the Golden Eagles, just a little bit of a deep dive. We usually want to do this on Thursdays, but obviously with it being week one, there's not too much to dive into. And again, with a big-time win, a 49-3 win over Alcorn State, not too much to dive into in terms of specifics, but there are some big names to know. Ethan Hampton is the quarterback for the Golden Eagles.
Former, I think, Illinois and NIU quarterback.
Yeah, senior, 6'3", 220 from Elburn, Illinois.
Yes, his went for about a .180 on through the air, touchdown, an interception. I have the stats pulled up. So I said a .180, and you said exactly.
I thought you said about a .180, and I was like, exactly a .180.
Yeah, it went through a .180 on the air, a touchdown, an interception. QB rating a 28.7, so not the most ideal, but this team was really propelled by their rushing attack. 57 carries, 317 yards, and 6 rushing touchdowns, dominated the trenches. Steven Robinson went for 23 carries, 123 yards, 3 touchdowns. Jamaris Wilder had 1490 and 2 touchdowns of his own. So this is a team that's going to want to run the football, Christian.
Yeah, Mario Sanders, again, as Brad Law said, now number one. Their lone target that had more than 3 grabs, went for 6 grabs, 94 yards, had a touchdown in there as well. The kicker went 0-for-1 in terms of field goals, but made all 7 of his extra points. Looking at the overall just offense before we look at some of the defensive statistics, it's a team that ran 84 plays, and obviously that means because of the score, you had a lot of success. But it's a team that, from what we have seen, what we have heard, wants to get on the ball. They want to go fast. They want to score points. And so it's going to be a challenge for this Auburn team, especially in that first half. We are trying to figure out what exactly they're wanting to do, what exactly they're going to try and do, whether that's schematically or whether that's just, again, getting on the football and going. Because, as Brad said, again, in hour number one, we only really saw a half of what this team was really wanting to do, and they still kept a lot of their playbook hidden. Total side note, are you a fan of the word, like, vanilla, like staying vanilla early on in a season?
I kind of do. I kind of like that idea because, you know, not putting stuff on tape is important. You know, I'm not a coach, never have been, but I'd love to hear a coach's opinion on this. Maybe we can ask Coach Dunn at some point soon. I know you might be able to talk to him tomorrow because the drive will also be from Laurel Oaks Veterinarian Hospital, but being able to prevent them from scouting you as much, I think, is a big proponent of what they're going to do, because these games are all on TV now. Like, it's not like where you're having a scout like in high school by driving down there and watching a game. But I really think that that's a good idea to not have to scout that kind of stuff. So you just go, okay, we're going to go. Maybe we're not going to run our trick plays and our reverse. That's why I was so frustrated about the fake punt in the Baylor game, where you're burning that punt play early, like that you're putting that on film early. You're never going to be able to run it again. It's the same kind of idea.
They have wrinkles out of that.
It's still, I mean, I think that's that's why you kind of keep it vanilla, so that you can have some wrinkles and then you wrinkle your wrinkles.
I think
you can wrinkle your wrinkles, Christian. That's totally okay.
I think you might be the first person in the history of the world to ever ever say that sentence before.
I'm fine with
there's nothing wrong with it, but it doesn't sound right.
It doesn't sound right at all.
But I think that Auburn has just been, at least from my standpoint, has been cursed by the word vanilla of frustrations, where it's like, okay, we get it. The run up the middle and the screens, they're there, but we stayed really vanilla, Christian. We did what we needed to do. We got in, we got out, but it's like eventually, like,
well,
is that being vanilla or is that just the offense? I think we've been burned by that terminology.
But I think the opposite was true during Gus Malzahn with the eye candy. It was like you're pulling out a Cody Burns, like, again, part of my 2010 rewatch, we're pulling out a Cody Burns Wildcat touchdown against Arkansas State.
Yeah.
Like, that was the first touchdown of that season. It's that kind of stuff. It's like, save that for when you're going to catch a defense completely by surprise.
Save that for the carry-on jump pass.
Right. Or the Cam Newton Ole Miss catch that I haven't gotten to yet, but
I don't know how much of that was vanilla. That was just,
well, that's not vanilla. That's like
freaking
the
awesome.
That's, you know, that's saying like that's when you can do, when you stay vanilla, you can do that. But like Gus's offense was just eye candy. It was like he didn't care, man. Like he's like, we're gonna do whatever we want, whenever we want.
It's funny you say
you
that
stop
though, because
us.
It gets to that point.
Okay, got you. Yeah, we're not there yet. No, we're about 7 years.
You still
from that.
Have some time, but it does. It gets to the point of like, okay, you scored 35 in the first, and you scored -3 in the second half. Like, that's kind of
interesting,
kind of where you're at. But back to the Southern Miss team.
Looking at the defense here for a second.
Yeah, had one sack, two guys combined for half a sack. They had 137 tackles, so do that with what you will. Their DBs and their linebackers led the way. Laquan Robinson, Mathis Haygood, and Melvin Spriggs combined for 23 tackles between, again, the three of them. They did have a forced fumble, and they had three interceptions. They had four interceptions, three of them from Kobe Albert, who is their primary DB. He is the guy that I filled out a questionnaire for, I believe, for Auburn Daily, and talking about guys to look out for. And I mentioned Kobe Albert, the 5'11 junior from Birmingham, who had one tackle but did have three interceptions in that contest. And so
I think
just find 22 and
don't throw it there.
Simple enough.
Yeah, you look at this, and this Alcorn State team got off to a really slow start in this game. That Alcorn gets the ball first, they throw an interception. Then it's a 12-play drive, which ends in a missed field goal. They force a punt. Southern Miss then throws an interception, and Alcorn State kicks a field goal. They throw an interception in Southern Miss territory. Alcorn State kicks a field goal. And then they scored 49 straight points after that.
Yeah.
Four
straight touchdown drives going into the third quarter.
So, yeah, the slow start could be if that's a trend for Southern Miss this year, Auburn has to start out quick because they get better as they went on. Again, they put up 14 points in the second quarter, 21 points in the third quarter. And by the fourth, they were just killing clock. When you have a 9-play drive for three almost 4 minutes. You had another pull that's 2 minutes, another drive that's 2 minutes, but it's a lot of teams burning clock to get out of it.
Yeah.
Auburn has got to start quick. I know it's like, well, yeah, kind of like Mercer last year. Put them away early so that you can get guys some reps, like Tristan Tia, like some younger guys that maybe Auburn needs to see a little bit more of early, and that can help them on the back end. That's what I want to see, because this defense, I think can be solid, but again, their offense is going to start out slow too. Take advantage of it early. Put up double digits, or like whatever the football equivalent of a crooked number is. I'd say probably double digit points in that first quarter, and then you're going to have the momentum the rest of the way.
Southern Miss had 32 first downs to the Alcorn State Braves 11. They were 5 of 12 on third down. Had 543 yards of total offense, which we mentioned. Did throw a pick, but had 57 rushing attempts for 317 yards. Only 4 penalties as well, which is something that will help the road team out tremendously. When you're looking at a team that won 49-3, you expect the time of possession to be dominated by one team,
especially when you have 57 carries for 300 something yards.
Right, but we talked about the tempo and how fast this team wants to move. They only had the ball for just over 31 minutes, so almost not quite, but relatively split even in terms of overall time of possession. And I think a lot of that is just because of you go and you look at the drives that, Southern Miss had. 12 plays, 68 yards, just over 3 minutes. 10 plays, 75 yards, just over 3 minutes. 11 plays, 80 yards, almost 4 minutes. 13 plays, 97 yards, almost 5. 8 plays, 70 yards, almost 4. I mean, this is not a team that wants to go have one of those 8-minute scoring drives, even though they very easily could have with the amount of yards they had to gain on a couple of those drives. Again, 80 yards, 75 yards, 97 yards, 70 yards. And so it's a team that wants to get up on the ball. It's a team that wants to go quickly. And the best way to do that is you get Auburn. If you are Auburn, you get out in front and make it to where you have to speed them up. They want to go fast, but there's a difference in going fast and being forced to go fast, and I think that's what Auburn wants to do because that's when you could see some of those mistakes.
Right, and you look at what they want to do. Again, it's very similar. They have some crossover with staff members, knowing what Blake Anderson likes to do with this Southern Miss squad, and you just can't play Southern Miss game where they're going to go down and score no matter how much time you're taking off the clock. You have to make it slow the game down, force them to huddle up. You can't let them get momentum via tempo where they're getting 5 yards and then you have to come back. That you can't sub and they're going to hit that your formation and what your personnel is looking like. Hit it for 10, first down. They're going to run up to the line, snap it, hand off. You're still getting your feet down, and by the time you're already at midfield, your hands are on your hips. You're tired. Again, I talked about Gus Malzahn earlier. That's what they did. You've got to avoid that. Force them to huddle up. Force the clock to, force them that they have to take time because you're going to be the team that sets the pace of this game, not them.
We'll take a break. We'll come back and talk a little bit about the ESPN win projectors, that little pie chart that you look at when you click on Auburn versus whoever, and how after that Baylor game, they may not be as high on Auburn. We'll talk about that and how week one really doesn't matter when it comes to that kind of stuff. And before Chris Gordy, host of the Locked On SEC podcast, joins us at the bottom of the hour, we're back right after this here on ESPN 106.7.
You're on the line with Christian Griffin and Trip Upton. Be a part of the show by calling 334-321-1390 or text us at 334-784-1685.
We're back here on the Thursday edition of On the Line. He is Trip Upton. I'm Christian Griffin. Appreciate everybody for being here with us. And not going to spend too much time on this topic, but just wanted to pull it up while we had the chance. Total side note, have not looked at it yet. Did the Astros beat the Phillies today? They did. They beat them 2-1. That's big.
Boom. High five.
Oh, high five. Okay, sure. Yes. That's big for Houston won the series in Philly. The Braves lost the series to the Rays, but the Braves won today. The Phillies lost today. And so basically both teams lost the series, which means that series was a wash. And so that is huge because the Phillies now make their way back to Truist Park as the Braves try and continue climbing down their magic number for the NL East as well as, or I guess the playoffs as well as the NL East. But I don't know why I hadn't looked at that. That's a very, very big win for the Astros and for the Braves on that side of things, with Austin Riley and Ha-Seong Kim winning the game for the Braves.
Who would have thought?
Who thought we would have been here?
Not me.
Definitely not me. But again, this is not something that you take with more than kind of just a grain of salt when you're looking at it. But when you go and you click on these games and you look at Auburn versus Southern Miss and you see the matchup predictor and it has the little pie charts with who's projected to win those games. Obviously, Auburn with an 87.7% chance to beat Southern Miss, but started scrolling through some of the others. That was unnecessarily tough to say. And if you go just based off of this, we can do it live just to see what they would have Auburn's schedule being. Obviously, a win over Baylor, a win over Southern Miss. They have Florida now the favorites in Jordan-Hare Stadium, as does the spread. It opened up at dead even. It is now Florida by a field goal inside Jordan-Hare Stadium, so that would put the Tigers at 2-1. Vanderbilt, Auburn has a 65% chance of winning that contest, so that would put you at 3-1. At Tennessee, Tennessee, a big favorite. It's almost 70% to win that. In terms of, again, just looking at the matchup predictor, that would put you at 3-2. Obviously projected to lose in Athens, Georgia with an 86% chance of winning that one. A lot of people circled LSU as possible, a slip up for the Tigers of LSU, but LSU with an 80% chance to win that contest. Oh,
I mean, that makes sense.
Doesn't necessarily help. A lot of people circled Ole Miss as well. Ole Miss with a 70% chance to win, according to the matchup predictor. Arkansas, Auburn, a big-time favorite, almost 80% to win that one. And here's the toss-up game. Auburn with a 50.6% chance of winning in Starkville against Mississippi State.
That game,
we talked about it. With Kamario Taylor and Mississippi State, how scary it is. We talked about it, that Mississippi State was going to get somebody. Just don't let it be Auburn.
See, the problem is, at what point does that – again, let's hope that this doesn't come true, but at what point of the season is it not Mississippi State gets Auburn and Mississippi State takes care of business?
Because
with those percentages, there's a chance by that. Not that I'm worried about this. I'm just saying there's a conversation that needs to be had at this point.
Yeah, but right now, again, Auburn's only favored against Southern Miss, against Vanderbilt, against Arkansas, and then against Samford, where they are 99% chance to win. And then Alabama on the road, 84% chance are the Crimson Tide favorites. And so, again, not that that's worth diving too far into, because, again, it's week one, and people sat there and said, oh, well, Auburn played a terrible game and looked terrible doing so against the Baylor team that I think is a lot better than people realized, as well as some of these other teams having 800 yards of offense against a high school junior varsity team.
Hey, look, people, Auburn fans, just college football fans in general, remember, numbers don't win games. Players do, coaches do, teams do. If everything happened as way it was projected, no one would have any fun. There would be no upsets, so...
Why you play the game, Paul?
Why you spot the ball?
Spot the ball, deserve to win. 1% better, drop in the buckets.
Control what we can control.
Control what we can control. Synonyms of coach speak. We'll see the best coach speak that Chris Gordy, host of the Locked On SEC podcast, has. He joins us next.
Halfway through hour number two, you're on the line with Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7.
More minutes here on the Thursday edition of On the Line here on ESPN 106.7. He is Trip Upton. I'm Christian Griffin. Appreciate everybody for spending some time here with us, counting you down closer and closer to the start of high school season. I guess it's technically high school season, but high school Friday nights, as well as the week two slate, which we have been able to talk a whole lot about over the last handful of days, and how the slate this weekend is absolutely incredible. And what better man to bring on than Mr. Chris Gordy, host of the Locked On SEC podcast. I appreciate you for taking some time. Chris, I have to ask, do you have a go-to coach speak term or saying that you live your life by?
You know, one game at a time.
There we
Gotta take it one game at a time. I mean, it's, you know, you're not gonna, Rome wasn't built in a day, you know.
That's a good one.
Kind of got to go with.
We've been discussing those of a drop in the bucket, 1% better every single day, control the controllables.
Go 1-0.
Yes. Oh, fantastic. Fantastic.
Well, the one I hate, though, that the young kids keep using nowadays is, what is it? It's something like be where my feet are and stuff. I'm like, get the hell out of here with that hyperbolic crap. Like, just say, I'm focused and I'm ready. You can just say that.
I'm being present. I'm just being where my feet are, Chris. That's.
Oh, the other one is keep the main thing the main thing. I'm like, what a redundant.
The standard is the standard, Chris.
Oh man, we need to have a full-on segment on coach speak, and they continue to make less and less sense. But my man, appreciate you for taking some time here this afternoon. Before we dive into some college football, thank you from Braves Country for the Astros taking care of the Phillies in the three-game series. It's a very big series for the Atlanta Braves, and so thank you to the Houston Astros. I don't know that I've ever said thank you, but I did here today.
Well, that one was scary today, but luckily, yeah, they take 2 out of 3, and that might be the most dangerous lineup in baseball, the Phillies. And, oh, by the way, the Braves come to town here in a week or so, so it's going to be interesting.
It's going to be awesome. The Phillies make their way for a three-game set at Truist Park this weekend to what could decide the NL East. And so very, very excited for that side of things. And Chris, wanted to start today's conversation again on the football side of things with your thoughts of everything that happened either A, in Ann Arbor this past weekend between Western Michigan and the Wolverines and their fantastic maze outs and the storming the field following the second Hail Mary. But then also the Big Ten releasing their statement saying that they're now going to have audio when it comes to any of the official reviews and ask the question on why the SEC is not following suit.
Yeah, I think, look, everybody agreed that was an absolute debacle. I was at the LSU game and I was following it on my phone and I get like the text alerts from like On Three and everything, and I get the alert: Western Michigan wins, pulls off the upset. So I put my phone away. I'm like, damn, all right, good for you, Western Michigan. Michigan sucks. Well, then I get a text from a buddy like 10 minutes later. He goes, did you see the Michigan game? I go, yeah, man, that was crazy. He goes, yeah, I can't believe they won. I'm like, yeah, man, Western Michigan really pulled it off. He goes, no, Michigan won. I'm like, what the hell are you talking about? And so I had to go to Twitter and saw the highlights, and like, man, that what a joke to put a second back on the clock. But again, this sounds like a good thing is going to come out of this, and that, you know, we're going to have more transparency. That's all people want. I've said that for the longest. Like, I don't understand why we don't, you know, mic up the refs and mic up the guys in the review crew and all that instant replay. Like, have full transparency. Show the fans what's going on there. But did not know that if a player went out of bounds and comes back inbounds and touches the ball, as soon as he touches the ball, that the clock dies. And so luckily Michigan got the extra second. And, it was like somebody said, like, Western Michigan, I know you were so close. You feel like you got cheated, but then again, don't give up a 45-yard pass play on the last play of the game. I know you thought you won it, but just go do that again. And you couldn't do it again. So, good for Michigan, but man, I've never seen so many people hop on the Oklahoma bandwagon.
Oh, my gosh.
Look, if Michigan had won 50-14, I think everybody would be like, man, Bryce Underwood and Michigan, they're going to hold serve. They're going to beat OU and Mateer. But everybody and their brother was on Oklahoma this weekend.
You know, Chris, the only thing more controversial right now than the Western Michigan-Michigan game might be the LSU Tigers in the SEC. Looks like hopefully cooler heads are prevailing in both the SEC office as well as Louisiana. What happened that made us go from, man, we might be looking at censoring this team to, yeah, you guys might be getting kicked out of the conference and now back here?
You're talking about LSU?
Yes.
Yeah. I think it's a little, like, I'll put it this way. I think we all took the idea of pro players and ran with it a little bit too far. I think, you know, when we had attorney generals coming out and getting involved, I suddenly saw, I'm like, oh, there's people that don't fully understand this situation. Like, there's people that are just going with, and look, On Three and some of the national people are to blame for it, right? Because, like, the day that LSU was interested in trying to add Daquan Wright or Xavier Harris, they were like, former Saints player Xavier Harris. And I'm like, former Saints player? Like, my buddy covers the Saints. He goes, dude, they brought him in for training camp. They paid him like $200 in gas money. He was hurt the whole time. He never went out to a practice. He never wore a Saints jersey. So to call him a Saint, he's like, he's no more a Saint than you or I are a Saint. Yet people got so hung up on this idea of training camp. If you made it to training camp with an NFL team, then you should not have the right to go back to college. And I think this whole thing's a very nuanced conversation, because this was the class of 2022 that got 4 years, thought they were done, and the NCAA and the D1 council come out and go, no, 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 moving forward, everybody gets 5 years. And those guys that literally just left school went, wait, what about us? And they went, well, sorry, life's tough. When the NCAA knew they were going to do this back in January, they should have put in a stipulation and said, hey, just a heads up, if you're a graduating senior right now, we're thinking of passing this thing that might give you guys an extra year. In fact, it's very likely to pass. So, you know, Daquan Wright and these other guys, don't jump to the NFL just yet. Hang out a minute, because you might get an extra year. Well, they never told them that. So they went off to the NFL, and people said, oh, they declared. They didn't declare for the draft. They just were done with school. So they were available for the draft. And I ended up getting to training camp and ended up getting cut because they weren't good enough and wanted to go back to school. But how that went to pro players, as if Lamar Jackson is leaving the Baltimore Ravens to go back to Louisville, like that's where it got so screwy in my head. I'm like, can we please pull this thing back and act like, you know, we're not asking Adrian Peterson to come back to Oklahoma and play pro college football? Like, this is insanity. But that's where all the disconnect got. I understand Lane Kiffin and LSU trying to add the guys, because look, there's been so many exceptions to the rule in the last 2 years, from Diego Pavia getting an extra year to Trinidad Chambliss and his medical condition getting a sixth year to the list goes on and on and on top of guys that went to, you know, that were rookie minicamp invitees. I mean, Cole Hudson at Texas. We're seeing Sterling Webb at Mizzou. I literally just saw a Michigan guy just got a fifth year. So nobody, like, the lines are so skewed in what's right and what's wrong and where we draw the line. And I think the SEC and Greg Sankey just get so fed up with everything that they decided to draw the line here. I compared it to, it's like if you own a shop and, you know, like some 7-year-old kids are stealing candy from you, and the first three or four, you're like, hey, put that back. And then the sixth one, you end up calling the cops on them. That's kind of what this is. It's not that LSU did something so egregious. It's that the SEC is to a point where they're going, look, we got rules and we got to institute them, and we're going to use LSU as an example. And so I think that's how this thing got to where it is. Now, I was told, you know, somebody was asking, why is Lane Kiffin so insistent on trying to get these guys? Because you saw on Saturday night, their team's damn good. They don't need these guys. But I was told that in the room at Ole Miss, when the players were trying to decide, you know, should we let Lane Kiffin keep coaching the team, Daquan Wright was one of the guys that stood up and said, hey, I think Coach Kiffin should keep coaching the team. Mm-hmm. And so because he stood up for Lane there, Lane was trying to stand up for him here and him trying to go back to college. So it is what it is. They didn't make the roster. And, it sounds like the SEC and Sankey still want to put some kind of punishment on Kiffin and LSU. So we'll see if that comes to it. But this whole trying to kick him out of the conference, they're a charter member of the SEC, 100-plus years in the conference. And they are one of your biggest brands.
Yeah.
I know last year I think they were 14th in terms of revenue, but the year before they were 6th in total revenue in all of college sports. You're not kicking that team out of your conference. The TV ratings just came out. They were the number one rated game over the weekend. You're not kicking that team out of your conference. That whole thing was just absolutely stupid. That even got out there, we're going to vote on kicking LSU out. Like, please stop.
It's almost to the point of where, like, legitimately LSU would almost say, like, please, like, what you're telling me, we don't have to rev share, we don't have to do anything like that, and we can go be Notre Dame and play whoever we want. It feels like LSU could almost take the better end of that stick. But talking about this 5-for-5 stuff and the how crazy this story has gotten, how much of this is just on the NCAA calendar? I feel like that's not something that's being talked about enough, just in terms of how crammed it feels like everything is, whether it comes to the transfer portal and now the additional changes that they're making to where it's now an even shorter window that opens up when you're still playing football. I mean, how much of this is to blame on just the overall calendar of college football?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of this. And you know, what's so weird was I was getting like Facebook memories that, you know, you get like, oh, 6 years ago you were here. And like, this past week, I was getting notifications like, 6 years ago, you were at, you know, in Austin for Texas LSU and all this. And I'm like, gosh, like that, we are behind right now on the calendar. Like the fact that week zero this year should have been week one, and week one should have been week two. We got started late this year for whatever reason. And, you know, I think that's why they made the change for next year, that they're moving everything up. Mm-hmm. Week zero will no longer be a thing. Week zero will become week one starting next year. And so that kind of course corrects a little bit of the calendar, and I think it's going to give teams an option to add a second bye week next year,
yeah,
which I think will be good for everything and resting and everything else, particularly going to a 9-game SEC slate. I think everybody's going to want that. But yeah, I mean, the calendar, it's imperfect. And the other part is, I mean, the regular season ends the first week of December. And, you know, by that time, most teams who have decided to move on from their coach have already fired them. And so, again, like, I don't know where you figure out in the calendar on when you're supposed to hire your next coach and when that coach, more often than not, that coach will have a job that he currently holds and maybe is still coaching. So I don't know how you fix all that. I'll leave that up to people who make way more money than I do.
Chris Gordy, host of the Locked On SEC podcast, here with us on the Thursday edition of On the Line. And Chris, we've been able to talk a whole lot about week one, but beginning to now get our preview for week two, because the slate this weekend is going to be a whole lot of fun. I'm going to leave the two biggest games out for just a moment, but a little bit of a rapid fire, just your immediate thoughts when looking at this game or just these games, Missouri and Kansas kicking things off on Friday nights.
Yeah, big rivalry game. I think Mizzou wins and wins big. Austin Simmons was outstanding in week one. He's a really, really good quarterback, very underrated. Jamal Roberts, he'll be fine toting the rock in the run game. Donovan Olubide came out as one of the best receivers in the SEC in week one. I think Mizzou wins. I saw Kansas a little bit last week. Maybe we'll have a little bit of home field advantage, but I think a lot of Mizzou fans are making this trip and are going to be down there Friday night. I think maybe it's close for a while. I think Mizzou pulls away and wins by double digits.
Kicking things off on Saturday afternoon, is there any way that Arizona State walks into Kyle Field and gives A&M, who's a 14.5-point favorite right now, a run for their money?
Yeah, give Arizona State a little bit of credit. Their quarterback this year is the former Kentucky quarterback, Cutter Bowley.
Yeah.
He had 6 touchdown passes in week one. Again, they were playing from slappy. Most teams were playing slappies, but A&M shut out their opponent. They were one of the few SEC teams that put up a zero defensively. There's talk of the Wrecking Crew defense being back there at College Station. So it's a home game, but it's early. It might be a little sleepwalking for A&M. It might be kind of one of these low-scoring, close games early. So keep an eye on that one. But I think Aggies at home, they'll win and have a big second half and pull away. But that intrigued me. Cutter Bowley's a decent quarterback. I saw him in person last year, and he's off to a good start. Kenny Dillingham's a good coach, so we'll see if they can hang in there.
Big Blue Nation's talking a whole lot about making this game the loudest Kentucky football game ever. You even heard the head coach talking about how if you need to sneak a flask in, do whatever you need to do to make a whole lot of noise. Does Alabama struggle with Kentucky on the road?
Man, I really want to pick Kentucky to win this game. I really do. The two coaches I sat down with at SEC Media Days were Kalen DeBoer and Will Stein. So I'm not showing favoritism here. I like both guys, but man, what a feather in their cap what this would be for the game two of the Will Stein era to upset Alabama. The way it happens is this: Keelan Russell is making his second career start, his first road start in the SEC. Does he make the big mistake? Does he throw an interception? Does he fumble the ball away? I love what we saw out of him week one. The running ability is what's going to make this offense go for Alabama, but who knows? You know, to me, it's Keelan Russell versus Kenny Minchie. The first quarterback to make a big mistake is what's going to cost their team in this one. So I think Will Stein, he's got the offense figured out. They ran the football great with C.J. Baxter. They're going to want to get into a shootout. I think Bama wins, but man, it would. Don't be shocked if this game is close in the fourth quarter. Kentucky is a much improved football team over last year.
Oklahoma and Michigan. You mentioned this to start our segment that everybody and their mama is taking John Mateer and the Oklahoma Sooners. Does this not scream college football for Michigan to do what a week ago nobody would say is the unthinkable, but now you fast forward to this week and it feels like Michigan, in terms of the public media, has absolutely no chance.
Yeah, I'll tell you guys, I mean, the home field is advantage. It's a difference maker for you know, probably about a dozen schools out there. Michigan is one of them. I mean, their fans, I expect them to bring it. But if you don't give them anything to cheer for, then they won't support you. Then the home field doesn't matter. So I'm curious, you know, maybe they can be in this one where John Mateer makes a mistake and maybe they have, you know, OU goes 3 and out early, but I just don't see a Brent Venables defense that this version of Bryce Underwood is going to lead them on multiple scoring drives. The only way Michigan has a chance in this one is that they keep it low scoring. If it's like a 17-13 type game, but I just feel like I don't see them scoring on Oklahoma's defense. Oklahoma's defense is legit. So Look, Mateer and company, can you get the 20 points? If they can get the 20, I think they win this one.
Chris Gordy, host of the Locked On SEC podcast here with us. And apologies, running out of time quickly. The game of the week, Ohio State and Texas. And plug everything you got and where people need to go to keep up with all of your information.
Arch and the boys finally break through. It's the third meeting in, what, like 18 months that these two teams have played each other. They get it done in Austin. Ohio State's damn good. But they've held Jeremiah Smith in check through the first two matchups. So Texas wins and wins big over Ohio State Saturday night. Locked On SEC, wherever you get your podcast.
Awesome. My man, we appreciate your time here. Looking forward to continuing to work our way throughout college football season. Nobody better than you, my friend.
Yeah, fellas, go take care of business against Southern Miss.
Let's go, baby. 32.5, baby. Chris Gordy, host of the Locked On SEC podcast here with us. We will take a break. We will come back, and we will wrap up the Thursday edition of On the Line right after this.
You are On the Line with Christian Griffin and Trip Upton on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and on the Radio Alabama app.
Wrapping up today's program. Appreciate everybody for spending some time here with us on this Thursday afternoon. Trip, your final thoughts from, or I guess, for tonight's game in Australia.
I thought you were going to say Miami, Florida A&M, Miami big. I think they're going to start doing kind of the, we might leave our stars in maybe an extra couple drives to get them some Heisman buzz, but look, I think that everyone's been talking about this 49ers team and how they're going to be the Death Star of the NFL this season. Matthew Stafford trying to get a second ring. Give me the 49ers. A little upset win. I think Brock Purdy proves why he's one of the most underrated quarterbacks in the game.
There you go. There you go. He is Trip Upton. I'm Christian Griffin. Appreciate everybody for being here
opinion?
With us. Take the Rams. Why not?
Just make it interesting.
Standpoint of radio. Yeah. Live tomorrow. From Laurel Oaks Veterinary Center. Come out, join us, man. We're looking forward to having a really fun time. But T is Trip Upton. I'm Christian Griffin. We appreciate everybody for being here with us. And sports are so much better with an opinion, whether you love them, whether you hate them. We're back tomorrow to talk all about them, and we hope you'll be there to join us.